Stevens Underground Garage is next after a world news update on VOA Music Mix.
President Obama says full weight of NATO behind Ukraine. Eastern Ukraine calm after ceasefire announcement. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama said Friday that the full weight of the 28-nation NATO alliance will back Ukraine as the country defends its borders against Russia and battles a separatist movement in the east. Earlier Friday, NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen announced the security bloc would establish a rapid reaction force of several thousand ground troops with bases in several Eastern European member nations.
This decision sends a clear message. NATO protects all allies at all times.
Also during the summit, NATO leaders addressed the threat of the Islamic State radical militant group, which says it intends to expand operations beyond the territory controls in northern Iraq and Syria. A ceasefire between Ukraine forces and pro-Russian separatists appears to be holding today in Russian-speaking eastern Ukraine, raising prospects for at least a temporary halt to 5 months of warfare. However, Western leaders meeting Friday at a NATO summit said they were still planning a new round of economic sanctions on Russia. The World Health Organization says it will accelerate the deployment of experimental treatments of the Ebola virus as the death toll from the epidemic in West Africa jumps to more than 2,000. The WHO said Friday that survivors' blood can be used immediately to treat those infected with the virus. This is VOA News. U.S. officials have confirmed that an airstrike in Somalia killed Ahmed Abdi Gudane, the leader of militant group Al-Shabaab. Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren says the confirmation is a major blow to the terror group.
We think this will degrade their morale and hopefully it will also cause some internal strife as they try to determine who their next leader will be. And of course, whoever that next leader is will immediately need to worry about his safety as well.
Warren says the strike killed several other Al-Shabaab personnel in addition to Gudane. He says it was conducted in a very remote area of Somalia and that the military was confident that no civilians were killed. U.S. President Barack Obama said Friday the United States has consistently worked to degrade the operations of Al-Shabaab.
We have been very systematic and methodical in going after these kinds of organizations that may threaten U.S. personnel and the homeland.
Witnesses report that a U.S. drone launched missiles at a meeting of Al-Shabaab leaders in southern Somalia. U.S. job growth slowed sharply last month, with employers adding only 142,000 jobs in August. That's well below analyst expectations. Millar Sega has more from Washington.
For some job seekers, August was not a good month. Hiring fell to the slowest pace in 8 months, and the previous estimate for June was revised lower by 28,000 jobs. But if financial markets were worried, it didn't show. After the initial disappointment, stocks returned to positive territory. A new study by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants shows 20% of businesses surveyed expect to hire more staff. Seasonal aberration or not, U.S. unemployment fell 0.1% to 6.1%, likely because fewer people were looking for work. Millar Sega, VOA News, Washington.
A plane carrying 100 Americans from Afghanistan to Dubai has resumed its original journey after an unexpected landing in Iran. The charter flight from Bagram Airfield touched down in the southern port city of Bandar Abbas Friday following what a senior U.S. diplomatic official called a bureaucratic issue. An hours-long delay in leaving Afghanistan prompted Iranian aviation officials to question the aircraft's flight plan. Unable to return to Bagram because of fuel levels, the pilot landed in Iran until the issue was resolved. Washington and Tehran have had no functioning diplomatic relations since 1980. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
In Spanish, we say, La mejor variedad del mundo, VOA Music Mix.
Everybody says, the world's best variety, VOA Music Mix.
Come to the land of living dreams, where realists dream of the unreal. Beatniks at their bawdiest. The creative urge at its most primitive.
For those of you with heart conditions, or who are with young and impressionable children, we ask that you turn around in your seats.
Alive! It's alive! It's...
Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage.
Underground Garage. Now they will know why they are afraid of the dark. Now they will learn why they fear the night.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission.
I want counterculture. I want anti-establishment.
This is mass madness, you maniacs! You maniacs! You maniacs!
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Here we come. Walk down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, with the monkeys. People say we monkey around.
Singing, to put anybody down. Go where we want to, do what we like to do. We don't have time to get restless. There's always something new.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys. People say we're monkey around. We're too busy singing.
Look over your shoulder. Guess who'll be standing there?
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys. People say we monkey around. We're too busy singing. Put anybody down.
One time.
Did you have any idea how influential your little lower-than-low-budget black-and-white film about a day in the life of a pop band would be? Could you possibly have known you were creating, as Glenn Baker writes, the cultural blueprint for the post-war baby boom teenagers? How they dress, behave, speak, think, and most importantly, how they scream and cry when confronted with celebrity. There can be no doubt that even more than the dance craze called the twist, which was a warning bell of something new and wild about to come, the film called A Hard Day's Night communicated a sense of optimism, energy, and celebration of an imminent future filled with the thrills of unlimited possibility that would become the 1960s Renaissance. As the Beatles and Richard Lester were busy making bright and sunny history out of permanently cold, gray, rainy skies, on the other side of the world, bright and sunny skies were permanently observing cold, gray history in the form of a 30-year-old writer-director-producer named Bob Rafelson, who was busy kicking over mogul Lou Wasserman's desk to make a point. The point was well taken, and Rafelson was fired as associate producer at Universal Pictures. He didn't care. He'd been a rodeo rider in Arizona at 15, worked on a European-bound ocean liner at 17, played drums in an Acapulco jazz band at 18, wrote prize-winning plays at Dartmouth, worked as a DJ on a Japanese military station, and by 1962 was helping create the TV shows Hootenanny, The Wackiest Ship in the Army, and The Greatest Show on Earth, and had a crazy idea for a music-related drama series based on a folk singing group. By the time A Hard Day's Night hit, Rafelson had hooked up with manager Bert Schneider, who conveniently was the son of the president of Columbia Pictures. Screen Gems was the TV division of Columbia Pictures, and one day, they pitched Screen Gems president and former Little Rascal, not to be confused with Young Rascal, Jackie Cooper, a sitcom based on a Beatle-like band that would be written in a way that wouldn't talk down to kids, but be produced to reflect the new wild teenage energy and attitude. Jackie Cooper, being a bright guy who knew where his bread was buttered, authorized $225,000 for a pilot without even a written treatment or an outline submitted. It wouldn't have meant anything anyway, since there was no precedent for a show for teenagers. In 1965, the audience were either lollipop-sucking kids or irrelevant, troublesome juvenile delinquents. There was nothing in between. There was no minority programming because in La La Land, there were no minorities. We quote again Glenn Baker. Gays, feminists, blacks, hippies, bikers, protesters, and academics were seen on the same level as albino dwarves. Sad mutations of nature to be pitied. Schneider and Rafelson didn't even think about it. They quickly assembled writer Paul Mazursky, yes, the dealer in the original Sopranos executive card game, writer Larry Tucker, director Jim Frawley, cameraman Mike Elliott, and singer-songwriters Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. 437 actors and musicians answered the nine-line ad in Daily Variety, August of 1965, including Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, Harry Nilsson, Paul Williams, Danny Hutton, who was the former chauffeur of Kim Fowley and would take a step down from that career to join Three Dog Night, Stephen Stills, legendary DJ Rodney Bingenheimer, and Charles Manson. Would have been quite a different show with him in it. And oh yeah, a University of Connecticut banjo-playing folkie named Peter Thorkelson, later Tork, Texan Robert Michael Nesmith, Hollywood child actor George Michael Dolenz, and English child actor David Thomas Jones, middle names being all the rage in the 60s. Cut to a year later, Monday, September 12, 1966, and Schneider and Rafelson had done the impossible. They'd managed to combine A Hard Day's Night, Ernie Kovacs, A Healthy Dose of Marx Brothers, A Touch of Laurel and Hardy, A Little Hope and Crosby on the Road, a bit of Burns and Allen, and a lot of Three Stooges, and redefined what was possible on TV. Incredibly, they would overcome the natural prejudice of the aging National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences and actually win the Emmy for Best Comedy Series. It was monkey time.
Ready? it's hard to get by.
This is Oliver Lieber
and Brian Ray from the Bayonets, and you are in Little Steven's Underground Garage,
playing the coolest rock songs ever recorded.
be taken by horseback to the bandito camp. If you try to resist, you will suffer indescribable torture.
And if I don't resist?
Describable torture.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
A certain amount of success. If that were suddenly, like, taken away, wiped out, where would you be today?
I'd go back to the village and be a folk singer.
How about you, David?
I'd go back to the village and watch him be a folk singer.
Mike?
I'd probably go burn the village.
Straight to places far away. I need a change of scenery.
Another pleasant valley Sunday.
Sunday.
Charlie.
baby, we are celebrating the Monkees. Started with the theme that kicked off all 58 shows of their two seasons in 66, 67, 68 in there. Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart produced it, and they did a lot of the Monkee stuff. We'll be talking about them later. Mickey sang it, backing band Candy Store Profits. The Monkees wouldn't play on their own records until their third album. That's something else we'll talk about later. The first set started with Curtis Mayfield's Monkee Time, which he produced for Major Lance, 1963. The Last Train to Clarksville was the Monkees' first single, sold 400,000 records before the show went on the air. That's called promotion, folks. So Easy Rider from the Bayonets. They finally put out the album, Crash Boom Bang. Go get it, because it's obviously full of hits. Hits in our sense of the word. 30 years ago, it would have been full of hits. In the parallel universe where we live, it's full of hits. We don't care about that stupid reality stuff. Get it from thebayonets.com. Yes, the Beatles were not only great, they were lucky to have Richard Lester chosen for them for their first movie. When I Get Home was one of the five outtakes. Go ahead and name the other four, every one of which is a classic. And Carole King talked about moving to the suburbs for a minute, and she said the only good thing that came of it was they wrote Pleasant Valley Sunday. We're swinging, baby. It's Monkee time. Don't go nowhere.
And in a moment, the results of the contest.
What he means to say is, we'll be right back after the commercial.
We haven't forgotten where we've been.
We know where we're going, and you're welcome to come along.
VOA Music Mix.
Welcome back to Wild Kingdom, where today we're exploring the natural habitat of the electric monkey.
Try to do something about your filthy monkey.
No, not the Champs-Élysées, Clouseau. We're talking Sunset and Gower, baby. That's right, the old Columbia lot. To give some perspective on how successful the whole thing was, the first album sold 3 million copies. That was more than any of the six Beatles albums. And their second single, I'm a Believer, B-side I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, sold 10 million. They got so big, another English singer named David Jones had to change his name to David Bowie. Now, the man most responsible for their record success was a cat named Don Kirshner, music supervisor for Screen Gems and publishing mogul with Aldon Music. He put together with Al Nevins. It had a stable of writers that included Carole King, Jerry Goffin, Neil Diamond, Barry Mann, Cynthia Wilde, Neil Sedaka, and it all had started with Bobby Darin. Anyway, after the four Monkees embarrassed themselves at an NBC affiliates gathering, causing five important stations to refuse to run the show, which is why their ratings weren't that great, even when they were enormously popular, Bert Schneider panicked and called Kirshner to get involved with 8 weeks left before hitting the airwaves and, quote, perform a miracle. Schneider didn't realize he was already sitting on gold with Boyce and Hart's three songs. But 18 hours later, Kirshner flew out with 12 tracks to add the boys' voices to. But as the sessions for the second album began, it all started falling apart. Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork decided they came in as musicians and they wanted credibility. That meant they wanted to play on the records, they wanted to choose the music, pick the singles, the whole thing. It all exploded at the Beverly Hills Hotel at a gold record royalty check presentation where they were handed the early pressings of their new single, and Nesmith went crazy, saying he is no longer prepared to have his name on other people's music. This had been building up for a while, but it still took everybody by surprise. And here's where things really go wrong. Instead of Don Kirshner and his team, which included Lester Sill and Herb Mollis, saying, listen, you guys have every right to want to be involved for your own pride or whatever. You know, let's work it out. Instead of saying that, Mollis says they have the right to put out whatever they want. Read the contract. Well, that was it. Nesmith tells Schneider and Rafelson, fire Kirshner or find another monkey. They side with him. And much to the shock of Screen Gems, Columbia Pictures, and NBC, they fire Kirshner. And that really was the beginning of the end. The band would play themselves on the third album, have no hits, play on the fourth album, have one hit, and then go back to studio guys for the fifth to try and get their thing back. Now, Kirshner and his guys handled the whole thing really badly. But in fairness, we gotta say one thing. If you're looking for musical credibility, maybe you shouldn't take a gig at a situation comedy TV show that is based on a parody of the Beatles. I mean, that's insane. Nesmith's quest may have been noble and even understandable, but that doesn't make it any less insane. The fact that they kind of pulled it off for a minute, making their own records, was an amazing achievement, no matter how inevitably doomed to failure it ultimately was. The wild thing is, when you really think about it, as Mickey Dolenz himself said, for a minute, Leonard Nimoy, in real life, became a Vulcan.
Sinners, this is John and Brittany,
and you're in Little Steven's Underground Garage,
the only radio show with go-go dancers.
Ow.
She's a queen, a criminal, a snake. Saint Valentine burned at the stake. A bloody lamb, radiation blues. Sweet death is quick, but no, not you. You dig it when I suffer. You dig it.
Dolan's, do you think your son could ever rob a bank?
Oh, Mickey? No, not Mickey. It's a nice little boy, innocent, lovely, always right to his mother. Of course, she could have gone and bought some long-haired weirdos.
Way to win the girl you love. Signed, Anguished. My dear Anguished, the fastest way to a woman's heart is through her mind.
You know, I would never have thought of that route.
Thank you.
was a single that Don Kirshner issued without the band's permission, and the relationship never recovered. I don't know what the band's problem was. It's one of their best records. It was Neil Diamond rewriting his own Cherry Cherry. Well, that's cool with me. It's all Gloria sideways anyway, right? Gloria, of course, was stolen by Van Morrison from Satisfaction, which the Stones stole from their own last time. So, you're only as cool as who you steal from. But I digress. St. Valentine was John and Brittany. The new EP is Stories to Be Told. We'll be coming shortly. John and Brittany writing and producing. Get it from johnbrittany.com. I'm Not Your Stepping Stone was kind of made popular by the Monkees, but Paul Revere and the Raiders did it first, and the Sex Pistols did it last. You can't follow that. Smokey Robinson did not write Mickey's Monkey about Mickey Dolenz, contrary to popular belief. Matter of fact, when Smokey wrote that, Mickey was starring as Circus Boy. Yeah, Smokey was talking about Mickey Stevenson, A&R director of Motown. And I'm sorry, whenever I hear that song, I think of Bobby De Niro dancing around a car in Mean Streets. Just hold that image and try and keep a straight face. We'll be right back.
Radio continues to evolve.
And you're part of it.
VOA Music Mix.
Welcome back to Monkey Mania. Two guys that were a very important part of the success of the Monkees didn't get the respect they deserved at the time. They were painted with that same broad brush that colored the entire Prefab 4 concept as superficial Hollywood nonsense at a time when journalists were beginning to take rock and roll very seriously. The Monkees were only 9 months ahead of Sgt. Pepper, don't forget. Anyway, these days Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart are considered correctly to be one of the great songwriting teams of all time, and their production of the Monkees yielded a bunch of really good records. Tommy was born in Charlottesville, Virginia, and grew up in L.A. where his father taught him guitar. Bobby grew up in Phoenix where his dad was a preacher, so he grew up with church music all around him. After a stint in the Army, he made it to Hollywood where he met Tommy. They would write on weekends working for Don Costa's company and then split up after a bad car accident that sent Tommy to New York for treatment. It was in New York that Tommy would co-write with Curtis Lee one of the most important records of my life, Pretty Little Angel Eyes. And Bobby would hook up with Teddy Randazzo and co-write Hurt So Bad for Little Anthony. So they were both off and running as writers, but they were still occasionally interested in performing and would go back and forth for a number of years until finally both landing a gig at Screen Gems Publishing, Columbia Pictures TV division, and working for Don Kirshner. After they co-wrote Come a Little Bit Closer for Jay and the Americans with Wes Farrell, they finally got the attention of the boss, and Kirshner brought them out to L.A. They would end up auditioning for the Monkees, wanting to be their Lennon-McCartney, but some combination of Schneider, Rafelson, and Kirshner nixed it. They did let them write the songs for the pilot and ended up being the official music producers for the show. There'd be a lot of great writers for the Monkees, but the first two Boyce and Hart songs were the most important. The theme and that all-important first single. They finally end up joining Mickey and Davey in the mid-70s as Dolenz, Jones, Boyce and Hart. And in between, they'd make their own records. Most notably, this one.
Oh, I wonder what she's doing.
making me feel so sad. But I tell myself I didn't lose her, 'cause you can't lose a friend you never had.
Come on now.
Because a friend won't say it's over and go out just for spite. And now I wonder what she's doing tonight. Oh yes, I wonder what she's doing tonight.
Just may be the one. Someone to understand them, and you just may be the one.